This is F1 Debrief. It's a very grown-up response. On this show, we discuss narrowing the potential pit lane problems, the volume of data at Biggin Hill, and a unique championship idea. Last time we did a feedback show, we were talking about messages we'd had maybe weeks or months earlier about races that were way in the past, and we're going to do the same thing again because we are timely podcasters.
Okay. Is this going to be in any way relevant to anything that's happened lately? Please, can we kind of keep it, you know, vaguely up to date?
Well, let's start with the most up-to-date thing we've got. We discussed McLaren in the previous podcast, and we asked for your thoughts on their potential for 2015, and Pat from TooMuchRacing.com, he took his feedback to the next level and wrote an entire post about it, a brilliant article.
I love Pat for this response. This is the epitome of perfect responses. I don't think we could have asked for any more. We took away the comments, but Pat turned to his blog and he wrote all sorts of amazing feedback in response to things we brought up in the show. Have you got any, have you got maybe a selected highlights?
Yep, he said, McLaren are accustomed to being the lead partner with an engine supplier, getting all the good parts first and dictating the direction of development, the team being knocked down to customer status, funnily enough, because Mercedes bought the ex-Honda team, wasn't a situation that was going to last, especially once Ron Dennis got back in control. Now their work status is restored. I'm sure Honda will pick up customer teams later, but even if they do, their focus will surely be on McLaren.
It's what McLaren desperately need. You've got Red Bull, who are sort of Renault's unofficial customer status. Ferrari are obviously their own customers, and Mercedes are now their own customers. So this should even the field, into certainly in the long term, as long as Honda promised to stick around for, you know, it wasn't long ago they bailed out of Formula One. Let's hope that they're in it for the long haul as engine suppliers.
On the driver front, Pat said, I think Fernando in 2015 may not be the same as the Fernando throwing his weight around inside the team, demanding his own way. He could be a much more humble, docile creature, for a year anyway. My bet, Alonso will find his feet, Button will match or even surpass him. Alonso will ultimately score more points, but not that many more. Year two, that might be different. So we're in it for the long haul, even if Honda aren't.
Do you think Fernando Alonso has finally grown up? Have the rough edges been worn down on him? Have his years at Ferrari maybe mellowed him somewhat?
I think it takes some kind of adjustment in his character to be able to go back to McLaren.
Mm. Yes.
And so I think he's definitely changed. But whether it's a change for the better or the worse, that remains to be seen.
It's a very grown-up response from both Alonso and from Ron, I think. It says a lot about both of their characters that the two are willing to work together again. Ron wants the best driver. Fernando Alonso wants the best team. Together, they can make it happen. Potentially. It could just tear the whole thing to pieces one more time. But, you know, let's see how it goes.
Gavin wrote in to us with some safety concerns. I think he did send this during the season, but it's relevant now looking back. He said, Hi, Christine. I wanted to write in about pit lane safety. I think it's only a matter of time before mechanics get seriously hurt when the drivers are going down the pit lane side by side, and the FIA needs to crack down on it before it gets to that point. I can understand that no driver wants to yield a position, but there is a pit lane speed limit. A car that is even 1 inch ahead will remain 1 inch ahead all the way down the lane because they're both going at exactly the same electronically governed speed. The driver who is behind should never have been released by his pit chief anyway, so there should be an unsafe release penalty coming his way, but even before that gets passed down to him, he should back off and fall in line. Gavin does go on to say that he would black flag the drivers for running side by side because it just is a dangerous situation and we don't want to endanger the lives of the mechanics. But then again, drivers are going to take any advantage offered to them, aren't they? So what are you going to do?
Well, there's several things you could do. Maybe a black flag seems harsh. We've got 5 second penalties in next year, 10 second penalties. They would go some way. He's right. Gavin raises a fair point. It strikes me that with all the technology the FIA have at their disposal now, with their proposed virtual safety car, which will limit the speed cars can travel on track when a safety car is called, they should be able to put themselves in control of pit exits. Currently, it's down to the person in charge of the lollipop or the traffic lights to make a judgment call as to whether or not a car can exit safely. But I don't know why the FIA couldn't fit transponders in the pit lane to say when a car is X distance from a given pit stop, the car currently undergoing the pit stop could not be held. You know, you could say this car is, there are cars within range, you will stay where you are. That would make it absolutely scientifically fair.
For whatever reason, that gives me the feeling that I don't want them getting involved in that. That's not really their business. But I can't explain that because it is in the interests of safety. And we do see a lot of unsafe releases that don't even get looked at anymore.
It takes an element of sporting endeavour away from it, doesn't it? It takes the challenge away.
Yeah.
It's up to the team to decide whether or not the car should be released. And then it's up to the team to pay the consequences if they get that call wrong. But you could. I mean, the rule states that if there's a car within a certain window, then the parked car should not be released. So why not govern that mathematically with sensors? It seems to me there should be an FIA override. If one car's incoming, freeze the car that potentially might dive into its path. I don't know. Could be a technological solution to a hard problem.
But I think Gavin is right that running side by side down the pit lane is never going to end well. And they should be looking at it more. And cracking down on it because, like he says, the mechanics are the unsung heroes of F1, and we don't want to risk them.
I wonder if putting a tyre barrier one car width at the end of every pit lane would solve the issue. Because if their cars are going at exactly the same speed, somebody has to yield or hit the tyre barrier. Now that's not going to save anyone else from getting hit in the pit lane. But it would at least make sure that one car always follows another car out.
Better to drop behind than end up in the barrier.
Yeah. I mean, eventually you're going to have to drop behind, so why not just drop behind early and line yourself up?
Now a message from Peter, the straw bale builder from Melbourne, but New Zealand originally.
The what?
Peter, the straw bale builder. I like it when people have names like that, you know?
I love that. What? A straw bale builder?
Christine, the podcaster, just doesn't sound the same.
No. Love it. Peter, go on.
He said, sorry to say, I didn't notice any difference with your new mic. I don't know if you remember, but so long ago, I got myself a brand new mic and I was very excited about it and then I didn't use it for months.
Yours is better than mine. Okay.
He says, if it makes you happy, I'm sure it's making a difference. I've worked on many feature films and in radio and own a bunch of mics and various equipment and some are just nicer to use. Of all the podcasts I listen to, yours is the best sounding, caringly compressed to be loud but not crunched. Take that, BBC and all the other podcast producers I've subscribed to. I'm a McLaren fan, obviously, coming from New Zealand, and a Kobayashi fan. And hey, Kamui is Japanese, Honda is Japanese. What better? That would make my year. Now, obviously, that hasn't happened, but I did think it was interesting how little Japanese things have happened. Because they, you know, it used to be, there's Honda, they're going to have a Japanese driver.
That was, that was certainly the case in the past, and which is why Super Aguri ended up coming into existence. You've got something of a link with Jensen. He has a Japanese partner.
He does say it's like his second home.
So there is a sort of some kind of underlying link there. Kobayashi is a free agent, presumably, given the absence of Caterham or potential
absence of Caterham.
Depending on what they intend to do and whether or not they intend to continue with Kobayashi if they themselves continue. Yeah, he could spring a surprise. He could turn up somewhere. And I think we said in the last show or the show previously about McLaren, they are in need of more mileage. Kobayashi could be that man to give them more mileage.
Yes.
If only they had a team that needed
I did want Super Aguri back, didn't I?
Would you mind if they were called Caterham and ran a Honda engine?
Another Peter this time, I think a different one because he signs it a Brazilian fan. He said, this year I've noticed at least two teams commenting about their need to be able to make decisions faster in qualifying and the race, specifically McLaren and Ferrari. I find this can be an interesting topic for discussion. How do the teams process the information coming in to make decisions? How has this changed in the last decades with so much new data flowing in at a constant rate? What new roles have emerged? How come these big teams seem to be getting lost in the whole thing? Does the size of the operation actually hinder them?
I would imagine, actually, the amount of data that any team is able to collect is possibly the key metric that's hindering them. Because the larger the team, the more sensors they can afford to run, the more things you can put on the car, the more data you can track, the more variables you can keep track of. We know that McLaren have an operations center at their base in Woking, which runs real-time alongside whenever a car is running on track, essentially. And they process information and make decisions and feedback to those on the pit wall.
And that must be happening a lot faster these days because there was the whole Tata communications thing and sending information back a lot quicker.
Well, Tata, the promise of Tata is to rig up to hook up rather every Formula One circuit, every Grand Prix location with data connections in and out in order to process information faster so that teams' relays don't have to get sent via satellite. That is already benefiting Formula One management because they are able to do more processing. They do a whole bunch of televisual editing back at Bernie's HQ in Biggin Hill. That's enabled thanks to Tata. And presumably you would hope that teams are also allowed to use those data routes in order to speed up their processes.
Is that why we're getting more and more on-screen graphics, new ones?
Well, I think eventually the plan for Tata is to run everything from Biggin Hill. So they won't send a producer and all the mixing and recording gear around the world, which will save Bernie a lot of money because everybody will be stationed in one location. You'll just send the cameramen and the cameras. And essentially do everything else at home, which is very clever. Very, I think it must be unique to Formula One in terms of the ability to do that.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Having more data is always good, and being able to process it is obviously a skill. Seems like it's taking the intuition away from the pit wall a bit. You know, it used to be some guys on the pit wall with a pencil and paper and a calculator figuring out what they have to do next.
Yeah.
But now strategy is, if it goes wrong, we blame it on the computers.
That's true. And you think that, I mean, there were legendary people on the pit wall, you know, in Formula One days gone by. The guy on the pit wall was often the key player in any race team. Aside from the driver, they were as important to make those strategy calls. Nowadays, you have far too much information for any one person to process. So you have teams of people analysing it and then feeding back to, I guess, one person who makes the call, or two people if you've got some teams run two guys, one for each driver on the pit wall. I think it was Hamilton who was complaining this season that his setup is different. Mercedes setup is different from what he's used to at McLaren. Back at McLaren, each driver had their own guy on the pit wall, whereas Mercedes have one person who makes the best call for the team, not for the individual driver.
He wasn't too happy at the time that he said
it's
that.
It's a cultural change, and it's up to teams to run it the best way that they see fit. And obviously, it's worked very well for Mercedes. But there will be, investment in equipment, investment in people who can analyze this information faster and faster will be a key element of making your Formula One team faster. McLaren actually should be at the forefront of this. Interesting that Peter mentioned them as a team who are struggling because they have a whole division, a whole separate part of the company, McLaren Electronic Systems, which also build the homologated ECU. Which every car runs. So McLaren should be definitely at the forefront of this. So if they have too much data to handle, then they need to figure out a better way of dealing with it.
It's hard to know, really, because if there are innovations and if they're all happening back at the factory, we don't really get to hear about them.
No, we hear about the periphery of the information, like McLaren are helping hospitals make faster decisions regarding patients because they have this knowledge and this information. And I think one of the demo videos that's kicking around online, maybe we can link to it in the show notes, had children wired up to monitors which reference tire temperature and brake bias and things, which doesn't make any sense in a hospital, but the software was just repackaged and was still in a state of flux, so essentially referenced Formula One terms outside of Formula One.
Hospital telemetry.
Yes, exactly that. Telemetry for people.
Now we have something of a crazy idea from Hugh, and I don't know how much discussion it will generate because it's really, really out of the box thinking, but I thought it was worth airing it. He said, this is probably not an original idea, but you guys know the business a lot better than I do, so I thought I'd ask, would it make sense to have the entire field use the previous year's championship winning car every second, third, even fourth year? The whole field would save money on development for that year. The winning team would get paid for their car, so there would be an incentive to win, not that there isn't one already. And we viewers would get the one thing we never get, all the drivers in identical cars. Seems like it wins all round. You could even schedule major rule changes to coincide with the year off, so the engineers would have extra time to take some vacation, everyone says they're overworked, and have more time to prepare the new car. I like that he's really thought it through, you know.
Wow, that's
give
a lot.
Give the engineers some time off, that's always a good thing.
That is a lot of information to process. Every how many years? 4 years?
Two, three, or four. For the one thing, it would never happen because the fans wouldn't let it.
Oh, could you imagine the outcry? Goodness me.
So far beyond double points, it's not even funny.
I really like the idea of an off year, whereby you've got where teams don't have to do any development at all, but have time to process the new regulations and can work through all the changes.
So maybe like a frozen year.
that actually makes sense to me. This year, we saw so many teams struggle at the beginning of the year when they just simply couldn't surmount the issues that needed to be overcome in time. And I thought that was, at the start of the year, it was a little bit embarrassing for Formula One, where you're going into the first race of the year and commentators are discussing whether or not anyone will finish the race. And that's not the pinnacle of anything, if you can't make it to the end of the Grand Prix. So perhaps that's not a bad idea. Next year, the Caterham team have dispensation to run this year's chassis, which is a terrible idea. I understand why it's necessary for them in order to keep the cars on the grid. But the problem is everyone's going to be moving forward and they're not, and they're already at the back, which is just... They're just going to be worse.
When you're already 3 seconds off the pace, you don't want to be 1 year and 3 seconds off the pace.
It seems like the worst case scenario, but maybe if they had an old Mercedes and they could run that at the back, that wouldn't be such a disadvantage.
Yeah, a really significant problem with Hugh's idea. And by the way, I should say, I really love, the creative thinking and coming up with new concepts for things.
That's so far out of the box, you can't see the box.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Lost sight of it.
But yeah, the one big problem that Hugh's got with that idea is intellectual property. Because if you're going to give Mercedes car to everyone next year, they might have a problem with that.
Yeah, there's huge, huge things to overcome. It's not a terrible idea. Well, I'll tell you what the biggest problem I have with it. Here's my big issue, is that Formula One is a Constructors' Championship. So who would get the Constructors' title at the end of the year when... a Mercedes car won? Would you just give it that year to Mercedes?
Yeah.
Because they would have built, by rights, they would definitely have built the race, the constructors winning chassis. They must have by that process. So then why have a constructors championship at all?
Yeah, I guess that year it just is the drivers championship. And like he says, you do get to see that one thing that we always say, all the drivers in the same car, what would happen then?
But there are enough single-seater series to figure that out. I mean, if you want to know how Formula One drivers stack up against each other, just take a look at Formula E, where most of the field is made up of ex-Formula One drivers, and you can see how well they fare. Jean-Éric Vergne turned up in Formula E last weekend, completely aced it.
He did. Pole position.
Stuck the car on pole, barely having sat in the damn thing.
He was going for the win.
It was on track to win until his car gave up. So what we should perhaps do is put every Formula One, current Formula One driver in a Formula E car in the off-season and have them race those instead.
Some bonus races.
That would be an easier way of coming to the same conclusion without messing with all 4 year rules and
phrases. It does get a bit complicated, doesn't it? And then you're like, which year am I on? I can't remember. Should I be using this car? I got confused.
Interesting though. Thank you for that, Hugh. It's a mind-bending question, isn't it? It certainly puts this year's changes to shame anyway.
But as I say, I love hearing what people think. So that means you have to tell us what you think. There are many ways to get in touch. Sidepodcast.com/contact for the form and the email address, christine@sidepodcast.com, and the Twitter account @sidepodcast, and the voicemail 0121-287-225.
I'm pretty sure there are listeners out there who have some downtime coming up over this holiday period. I think this would be an ideal opportunity to leave your first side podcast voicemail. I think that would be a fantastic use of your winter break, and we would very much appreciate hearing your views. Do it. Get in touch. 0121-287-225 +44 if you're outside the UK.
Paul in Gateshead sent us a lovely message asking what we thought of Daniel Ricciardo's chances for the rest of the season. Let's gloss over that because obviously we know what his chances were for the rest of the season. But I thought it was a good time to plug our last debrief in which we got to talk to Adam and discussed the 2014 season, how the drivers fared, and looked ahead a little bit to 2015 as well.
It was a fine show. I hope you listened to it. Did we get any feedback yet from that podcast? I mean, it literally went out hours ago as we record this. That's asking a lot. We haven't got any, have we?
You did say you wanted a quick turnaround, but people haven't listened to it yet.
They haven't actually got to the end of the show before we start recording the next one. I said they were coming thick and fast.
I think possibly in one of our last feedback shows, we were told off for being wrong about something, which seems crazy. But David sent us a message saying, "Thank you so much for an immensely interesting and informative podcast. I'm a long-time listener and love the show, but No buts. You're awesome. I enjoy having your opinions on all matters F1, as is what I hope to be the case with the majority of F1 followers. You are not the only source of information I use for F1. However, as all know, to understand a subject, there needs to be a lot of input. So to those who may knock your opinions, your ideas, and what you say, well, they can go boil their heads. Me, I'm off to watch the last Grand Prix again. Have a great day. Boiling their heads. That seems a bit harsh.
Hallelujah. I love that. That's fantastic. If only we did more shows.
Yeah, well, we need to be all that input. If we need to be the only source of information, so that just means we're going to have to do more podcasts.
Uh-huh. I did see on Twitter maybe a couple of weeks ago, there was a suggestion that we should do a twice weekly show,
yeah,
which I think is a whole level of optimism above even our own ambitions.
But the trouble is, I think they said bi-weekly, which could mean twice weekly or fortnightly. Either way, quite optimistic.
Let's aim for fortnightly in 2015 for as long as we can, even if we only keep it up for 2 weeks.
And that leads nicely to our last message from Tim, who said, thanks for all the effort you guys put in to make my F1 experience better. I realise it takes a huge effort and I want you to know I appreciate you. I hope this continues. I really like Side Podcast. And it will continue despite all evidence to the contrary.
Oh, yes.
We know 2014 hasn't been the best in terms of our output, but really all we can say is our motivation is still there, probably higher than ever, and it's just us getting ourselves together
in order to do more. Well, Tim is that's my favorite message ever. Thank you, Tim. That is very simple and very to the point. And it is a whole ton of work to do this. Aside from all the things we do in F1, you're doing a whole bunch of other stuff in your real life outside of motorsport, which is impacted.
There's a life outside of motorsport?
And it's definitely taken away from Side Podcast, in recent times. And it's set to continue for at least another 6 to 9 months. But after that, you will be free. And when you're free, we will put our feet to the floor. It will be Side Podcast all the way. But just stick with us until then, if you can.
You can sort of tell when we've got a little bit of free time, like we have over the last couple of weeks.
Because all the shows.
There are more shows and content on the site ramps up a little bit as well. There's some recent stuff to view over there, including a review of the 2014 predictions. So all the readers came along and put in their predictions what they thought was going to happen in 2014. And now we get to look back and laugh.
You can tell also with the amount of free time we have that the quality of the content increases. I think our output in December has been better than anything we've ever done before. If only we could make that continuous threat an entire Formula One season. If we could keep that kind of pace up, crazy, we'd be laughing.
It would be amazing. There's also a collection of the best of the guest writers' posts this year, because guest writers pretty much held the site together in 2014. We love guest writers. And if anyone ever wants to write anything, we're more than happy to help out. And something that is worth pointing out is occasionally we get people saying, oh, I'd like to write something, but I can't really think of anything to say. Well, we have many ideas and no time to write them. So just let us know and we'll come up with something together.
Mm. Oh, goodness, yes. Yes, if you've got time to write, you've got inspiration to write, but maybe need some direction. Christine has all the direction and none of the time. So please do get in touch. Will there be a link in the show notes for people who want to write a guest post?
Yep, there will be. There always is. There's always a link in the show notes. So check them out, sidepodcast.com.
When you're done listening to this show, make sure you go there. If you're listening to this show right now, before it gets to the end, see if you can multitask. Find Side Podcast, get Side Podcast on your phone whilst you're listening. Get there just before this show ends.